The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. Lay it all down again. To hear you say that I'm a friend.
Good day. The Almighty Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. My name is James Robertson. I'm a researcher, publisher, and teacher regarding the matters and truths of the Almighty Creator, whose true name is Yah, the Eternally Self-Existing. I've been actively serving him since 1993, over 31 years. If you're not actively serving Yah, then by default you're serving Satan. My objective is to show you how you can make a big difference on earth and qualify for a position of high esteem in heaven for eternity. It's important to understand that as a believer, just being good is not the point. It is relationship with Yah that counts. Without this, you will be in a very unpleasant place in heaven with no way out. My aim is to show you how to get close. If you're a good person without a clear relationship with Yah, then you're in a spiritual no man's land and will not enter heaven when you die. The Creator has said regarding unbelievers, "Why would I want someone to spend eternity with me when they do not believe I exist?" Yah is calling everybody on the planet to be involved and serve him and help him to have victory over Satan. My goal is to show you how to do this. Fundamentally, we each need to learn to see things on earth from Yah's perspective. My aim is to teach you how to do this. Please visit my website at www.endtimeissueministries.org. That's endtimeissueministries, one word, .org. Or email me on james@endtimeissueministries.org. Today we're continuing with the good news regarding Yeshua, the anointed of Yah, incorrectly Jesus Christ, according to Matthew, incorrectly Matthew. And this is part 9. Overview. The first book of the so-called New Testament in the Bible, Matthew, or Matthew, Matiyahu, means gift of Yah. And you see the name Yah in Matiyahu, Mattiyahoo, and the Yahu is a form of pronunciation of Yah. So the name of Yah permeates the Bible in the names of people such as Matiyahu, Yahushua, Jesus Christ, or Jesus, and so forth. And the book of Matthew provides an authoritative account of the life, death, and resurrection of Yeshua, the anointed of Yah, incorrectly called Jesus Christ. I've corrected the core translation errors and added commentary based on my personal experience and revelation. I will share this in the next few broadcasts. This is part 9, and it's the second last broadcast. I continue to read Matiyahu and offer commentary starting with the moment that Yeshua asks to be released from his death through to the time he's laid in the tomb. Finally, we will look at the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator. So we're looking at book 1 of the good news, the book of the Bible, the good news according to Matiyahu, part 9, and we're looking at chapters 26 to 27. Verse 38. Then saith he, Yahushua, to them, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even to death. Tarry you here and watch with me." And he went a little further, and he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." It's so important to understand that he knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew he would be beaten. He knew he would be mocked. He knew he would be taken outside to the place Golgotha. He knew he would be nailed to the stake. and he would die an agonizing death. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. Remember, he'd lived without sinning. He did not have to die. Yah, let your will be done is a vital principle of true submission to Father Yah. And I just ask you to see the humanity of Yahushua just confronted with something. Remember, he was the firstborn of creation. He'd been with Yah throughout the entire history. He had seen people executed at this execution site in exactly the way he was going to die. He had seen the agony that they went through. Verse 40, and he cometh to the followers and findeth them asleep, and saith to Kepha, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his followers and saith to them, sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Adam is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. And while he yet spoke, lo, Yahudah, Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Yahushua and said, hail, master, and kissed him. And Yahushua said to him, friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they and laid holds on Yahushua and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Yahushua stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Just imagine, even though he knew it was going to happen, just imagine what must have been going on for Yahushua when this man who had walked with him for 3 years betrayed him like this. Verse 52, then Yahushua said to him, put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. And in one of the other Good News books, Gospels, it says that Yahushua reached out his hand and healed the ear. And yet, despite the miracle, they just carried on. Thinkest thou that I cannot pray now to my father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of messengers? Folks, this is important to understand. As an emissary, an apostle, Yahushua had a dedicated legion of a dedicated 12 legions, that's 12,000 messengers, angels, at his service. He could just simply have called on those messengers to deliver him, but he didn't. That's the level of his obedience. But how then shall the writings be fulfilled that thus it must be? In that same hour said Yahushua to the multitudes, are you come out as against a thief with swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you laid no hold of me. But all this was done that the writings of the spokesman of Yah might be fulfilled. Then all the followers forsook him and fled. Fundamentally, anointed believers should live above sin such that evil cannot touch them, and trust in Yah's messengers to protect them. Consider Tehillim, Psalms 34, verse 7. The angel of Yah, the eternally self-existing, encampeth around about them that fear him and delivereth them. Refer previously, Yahushua chose to die. He did not have to die, other than in the terms of the plan he had agreed with Yah. See the webpage, the miraculous planning of the death of Yahushua, where, how, and what. And they that had laid hold on Yahushua led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Kepha followed him afar off to the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and the elders and all the Sanhedrin sought false witness against Yeshua to put him to death, but they found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses and said, "This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of Yah and to build it in 3 days." And the high priest arose and said to him, "Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses came bring against thee?" Notice that he could have defended himself. He just stood there, elsewhere it's written, as a lamb to the slaughter. 63, but Yeshua held his peace, and the high priest answered and said to him, "I put you to oath by the living mighty one, that thou tellest whether thou be the anointed one of Yah, the son of Yah." Yeshua saith to him, "Thou hast said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Adam sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, "He has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now you have heard his blasphemy. What think you?" They answered and said, "He is guilty of death." Now just note that that is not blasphemy. Blasphemy is to take the name of Yah, the eternally self-existing, in vain. It's the third commandment. Saying that they would see the Son of Adam sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. They don't have to believe his claim, but it's not blasphemy. It's not a basis for death. So just notice the total hypocrisy of these unbelieving believers. Then they did spit in his face and beat him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, "Prophesy to us, thou anointed one of Yah. Who is he that smote thee?" So, telling them who hit him is not prophecy. It's not foretelling. It's not the thing that gets me about this whole story is the extreme extent to which these people who claim to be committed believers just behaved in such an absolutely unacceptable way. And as I say, I've in not in nearly such a severe way, but I've experienced this at the hands of the church on a number of occasions. Verse 69, now Kepha sat without in the courtyard, and a damsel came to him, saying, "Thou also wast with Yeshua of Galilee." But he denied before them all, saying, "I know not what thou sayest." And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him and said to him that them that were there, "This fellow was also with Yeshua of Nazareth." And again he denied with an oath, "I do not know the man." And after a while came to him they that stood by and said to Kepha, "Surely thou also art one of them, for thy speech gives you away." Then began he to curse and to swear, saying, "I know not the man." And immediately the cock crew. And Kepha remembered the word of Yeshua, which said to him, "Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." And he went out and wept bitterly. See his humanity. He went on to become a significant servant, but how often have you denied Yah, denied your belief? Chapter 27. When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Yeshua to put him to death. When they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Yehuda, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought against the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, "I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood." And they said, "What is that to us? See thou to that." See just the hard-heartedness. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. just notice the harsh disdain for the truth. The book of Acts says that Judas Iscariot, Yehuda, died in a different way, but Matthew's account, according to Father, is the correct one. Recognize that he sinned grievously, he repented, and then he took his own life. So contrary to what you might expect, if you're going to make it into heaven, you're going to find Yehuda there. Verse 6, and the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, it is not lawful to put them into the treasury because it is the price of blood. And they took counsel and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Wherefore that field was called the field of blood to this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremiah, the spokesman of Yah, saying, and they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value, and gave them for the potter's field, as Yah the eternally self-existing appointed me. Again, notice the extent of the foreplanning that went into Yeshua's death, the extent to which people were guided to do what they did in order to give effect to these sayings. So there we have Yirmiyahu 500-600 years before foretelling that Yehuda or someone would betray Yahushua, repent, return the money to the chief priests. Folks, there was nothing unexpected as far as Yah and Yeshua were concerned in this situation. And Yeshua stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, art thou the king of the Yehudai? And Yeshua said to him, thou sayest. And when he was accused of the chief priests and the elders, he answered nothing. Then Pilate said to him, hearest thou not how many things they witness against thee? And he answered him to never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Now, a few months ago, I shared the letter of this governor, Pontius Pilate, to the emperor in Rome, Tiberius Caesar, describing his interactions with Yeshua prior to this event, during this event, and subsequent. And it corroborates the accounts in the Bible, but it gives a much richer understanding of Yahushua's personality and the way he interacted with this governor before this happened. Verse 15, now at that feast, the governor was wont to release to the people a prisoner with whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, whom will you that I release to you, Barabbas or Yahushua, which is called the Anointed One of Yah? For he knew that for envy that delivered him. When he was sat down on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, have thou nothing to do with that just man? For I had suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Yahushua. The governor answered and said to them, whether of the twain will you that I release to you? They said, Barabbas. So we note there that through his wife, Yah warns Pontius Pilate to seek indemnity from judgment from heaven for what follows. So you're probably also going to find Pontius Pilate up in heaven just to rattle your cage a bit. Pilate saith to them, what shall I do then with Yahushua, which is called the Anointed One of Yah? They all say to him, let him be executed. Presumably there is some commonality between this mob that's baying for his death and the mob that proclaimed him king a few days earlier, who presumably decided that since he hadn't come and kicked the Romans out, he couldn't be the coming Messiah because of the wrong teachings. And those wrong teachings continue to today around when Yeshua is going to return, if Yeshua is going to return. People take it for granted that everything's going to happen and they're all going to turn out right. I've heard it said that read the book of the back of the book, we win. Not so. Completely wrong teaching. And the governor said, why? What evil has he done? But they cried out the more, saying, let him be executed. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I'm innocent of the blood of this just person. See you to it. Then answered all the people and said, his blood be upon us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas to them, and when he'd scourged Yeshua, he delivered him to be executed. It's really important that with Yeshua to be offered for atonement, the offering for atonement, his blood had to be sprinkled on the people. This was done by the words spoken here. See again the article, The Miraculous Planning of the Death of Yeshua, to understand more about this and about what follows. So they prophetically, they didn't understand it, but they prophetically called out the blood of the Lamb of the sacrifice on themselves and their children for cleansing. If they had not done that, a key part of Yeshua's role, key part of why he died, would have been missed. Then the soldiers of the governor took Yeshua into the common hall and gathered to him the whole band of soldiers. From the letter of Pontius Pilate, there were only about 100 Roman soldiers in Israel. So there was a limit to what they could do. And they stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Yehudai. And they spit upon him and took the reed and smote him on the head. And after that they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him and put his own raiment on him and led him away to execute him. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Shimon by name, him they compelled to bear his stake. Note that stake is the accurate translation of the Greek word staurus, which means the length of tree trunk. The cross is a pagan pornographic symbol, and it is an insult to Yeshua to say he died on a cross. It was not customary for somebody to carry the stake. It's an indication of how weakened Yeshua was by the beating that he'd endured. 33. When they were come to a place called Golgotha, the place of the skull, they gave him vinegar. And it's important, if you look at that article that I've referred to several times, The Miracle of the Death of Yeshua, and there's a photograph of Skull Hill, exactly where this took place, and it does look like a skull. They gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall, and when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. The goal of myrrh was to numb the pain, but Yeshua chose to suffer in full. And they executed him or impaled him and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the spokesman of Yah. They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there. And set up over his head, his accusation was written, this is Yahushua, the king of the Yehudai. Elsewhere it says that it was written in Greek, in Hebrew, and in Latin, in Roman. Now that's really, really important. This is another prophetic statement by Pilate proclaiming that Yeshua is the king of the Yehudai. How did Yeshua become king? Pilate made him king. The people mocking him made him king. There are no unnecessary details here, folks. This is a very, very, very precise plan of action. Note that Pontius Pilate had the authority to proclaim a king for the Yehudi. Verse 38, then there were two thieves executed with him, one on the right hand and another on the left, and they that had passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself, if thou be the son of Yah, come down from the stake. Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, he saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the king of Israel, let him now come down from the stake, and we will believe him. He trusted in Yah, let him deliver him now, if he will have him, for he said, I am the son of Yah. The thieves also, which were executed with him, cast the same in his teeth. So we just see the total carnality of the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. They have totally, totally missed Yah. And we'll see in a minute that even after he died, and the way he died, they still didn't get it. Verse 45, now from the sixth hour, that's about midday, there was darkness over all of the land to the ninth hour. So all afternoon it was dark. And about the ninth hour, Yahushua cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani, that is to say, my darling, why hast thou forsaken me? Eli is commonly translated God, but this is entirely inaccurate. Eli is a term of endearment towards Yah, the eternally self-existing, which is most accurately rendered darling, or my beloved, mighty one, is a term of intense endearment that summarizes the depth of Yeshua's relationship with Father in heaven. Lama is more accurately rendered lema in Arabic. Sabathani in the King James, more accurately, Shebakhtani. This entire phrase also evidences a further important point. Yeshua spoke in his death throes. Yeshua spoke in his native tongue, which was Aramaic, not Greek. This is striking evidence in support of the reality that Yeshua spoke Aramaic and Hebrew first and foremost. It is possible that he spoke Greek, but there's no evidence to support this. The way this verse is presented in the King James Version, which reflects the same treatment in the Greek manuscripts, supports the view that the original text of Matityahu, and indeed most of the text from Matityahu to Revelation, was in Aramaic or Hebrew and not Greek. This is vitally important to understand because the original Aramaic manuscripts were manually copied without formal scribal control and then translated to Greek without any formal control, and the Greek manuscripts were copied without any formal scribal control, and in all phases an element of doctrinal bias and misunderstanding colored the work. The consequence was that at the time the book, the Bible, was compiled, there were multiple Greek source manuscripts that differed from one another to the tune of around 1,250 instances, as reported previously. Going off on a little bit of an academic piece there, the key thing, my darling, why hast thou forsaken me? Yeshua was so filled with the Spirit of Yah that he could walk on water, that he could calm the storm, that he could feed the 5,000 and the 4,000 and all the people that went with him, that he could heal thousands of people. The anointing, the presence of Yah on him was so strong throughout this whole process that he could not die. And so at the last minute, Yah was forced to withdraw his spirit from Yeshua so that Yeshua could die. And if you have ever been anointed in any significant way, you will understand what a terribly traumatic moment that must have been for Yeshua to feel the Spirit of Yah lift off him and him to come down to being just a human being in a desolate, desolate situation. And in just considering this whole situation, because it's not made express really in any of the good news accounts of Yeshua's death. He was nailed to a stake. A nail, and don't think of a nice, neat 6-inch nail like you buy in the hardware store. Think of a roughly forged, about 10 millimeters, 3/8 of an inch, probably square peg that was driven through both wrists, nailed through both wrists, doing all sorts of damage and causing intense pain. And a similar peg through both feet into this length of tree trunk. And then he's hanging there. And when the pain in his feet gets too much, he pulls himself up with his hands and he's able to gasp a few breaths until the pain in his wrists becomes so great that he has to slacken off and take his weight on his feet. And for a moment, he rests on his feet and the pain becomes so great that he pulls himself up with his hands, his arms, and gasps a few breaths. And so he's hanging there. Until eventually he gives up and he dies. Do you have any comprehension of the intense agony that he went through for all those hours so that you could have an offering for forgiveness of sin? For you to have the authority in the name of Yeshua to cast out demons. For you, in the name of Yeshua, to get filled with the Spirit of Yah, so that you can heal people, you can walk on water, you can feed the 5,000, you can do greater works than he did, because he said you could. So I have to ask you, why are you not doing it? He's not asking you to pay the price. He's paid the price. Why are you so limp-wristed and ineffectual that despite the fact that you have access to the Almighty Creator of the heavens and earth and His Spirit in the name of Yahushua, and you're not doing greater works than He? I'm sorry to be so blunt and so harsh, but really get a fix on what he went through so that you didn't have to. And if you tell me you can't walk free of sin, I'm going to say to you, you're talking nonsense. Yeshua died so that you could walk free of sin. He showed you how to live a life free of sin. Verse 47. Some of them that stood there when they heard that said, this man calls for Eliyahu. So again, you see the ignorance of the people. And straightway, one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. The rest said, let be, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. Yahshua, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. And the earth did quake and the rocks were rent. So we see that those witnessing the event didn't understand Eli as a reference to Yah. Notice that the temple, the veil of the temple was rent from top to bottom. One report suggests that the curtain was a full woven curtain, was about 3 inches, 75 millimeters thick. The fact that it was torn from top to bottom indicates that this could only have been done by the supernatural and not by humans. And so Yah gave further evidence for the leaders, which they still denied. The ability of arrogant believers in error to ignore verifiable facts is substantial. Now, this is a really important point, fact, folks. The earthquake, and this is all described in that article with some images and some diagrams and a reference to a video. The earthquake generated a crack through the foot of the stake hole down to the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant in the cave beneath, so that Yeshua's blood could run down the crack. And remember, elsewhere it said that his soldier pierced his side and water and blood ran out. So he died of a ruptured heart. His grief and his pain was so intense. And so when they pierced his side, blood and water, and that was necessary, folks, so that the blood and the water could run down roughly 10 feet underground onto the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. So that crosshole, that stake hole, was cut into the rock absolutely exactly over the Ark of the Covenant. Now remember, the Ark of the Covenant is only about that big, and this was straight above it. When Jeremiah hid the Ark of the Covenant about 600 years earlier as Babylon was advancing on Jerusalem. The planning was precise. The earthquake was precise. The soldier with his spear piercing his side was precise. So the blood could run down the crack onto the mercy seat, thereby consummating the new covenant, inducting Yeshua as the offering for atonement of sin, and inducting him as high priest. Again, refer to the article on the miracle of Yeshua's death. This is really so important, folks. Without these very precise events, Yeshua would have achieved nothing. 52, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose, saints being anointed ones, and came out of the graves after his resurrection and went into the set-apart city and appeared to many. Now when the captain and they that were with him watching Yeshua saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, truly this was the Son of Yah. And many women that were there beholding afar off, which followed Yeshua from Galilee, ministering to him. Among them was Miriam from Magdala, and Miriam the mother of Jacob and Joseph, and the mother of Zabdi's children. The King James says, into the set-apart city, the holy city. Based on what we've been reading, Jerusalem was hardly set apart, hardly holy. So the Roman soldiers, the unbelievers, believed. And the high priests, etc., who were supposed to be the leaders of the believers, still didn't get it. 57, when the even was come, there came a rich man of Ramathaim named Joseph, who also himself was Yahushua's follower. He went to Pilate and begged the body of Yahushua. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered, and when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, which he'd hewn out of the rock. And he rolled the great stone to the door of the sepulchre and departed. And there was Miriam from Magdala and the other Miriam sitting over against the sepulchre. So the tomb is actually in the garden tomb in Jerusalem, which is right next to the execution site, as documented and discovered by Ron Wyatt. So there are a number of pieces that I've shared with you about this, the whole piece about the execution site and the Ark of the Covenant, which was discovered by Ron Wyatt about 50 years ago. He excavated the whole site, found the big round stone, the door of the tomb, found a sort of church worship site, found the four execution sockets in the rock for the execution posts, the stakes. So there were three in a line, and then a fourth hole between the two outer holes and just slightly further up the rock that was cut specifically for Yahushua. And by the way, specifically to be over the Ark of the Covenant. But remember that nobody knew the Ark of the Covenant was there. It was not until Ron Wyatt was shown by the Almighty where to dig and he found the Ark of the Covenant that anybody knew about the Ark of the Covenant. At the time of Yeshua's death, nobody knew about the Ark of the Covenant. They took it on faith that the things that were foretold had come to pass, that Yeshua had become the king of the Yehudah, etc. But there's key information in the article that I keep referring to, the miracle of Yeshua's death, that is known to very few people. There's a video linked to on that article, and I really encourage you to go and read that article prayerfully and thoughtfully. And have respect for what Yeshua did and how he did it and what he accomplished. And you make light of what he did if you say that he's God in the flesh. God cannot die. If God died, the entire universe would implode and collapse. Yeshua was 100% human, is 100% human. He did all of this as a human, and you can do as much or more than he did. I'll continue this next week when we'll talk about his resurrection and what he had to say to his followers in the while after that. So I want to wrap up and ask you, what is the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator? I'd like to ask you to critically examine where you are relative to the Almighty Creator. Do you talk to him constantly throughout the day and allow him to lead you in every possible way? Do you worship him at every opportunity? Have you clearly and unambiguously heard him call you friend? If not, you're failing in your life purpose and will be bitterly disappointed when you die. If you've now come to belief, please pray along the following lines. Father Yah, I come to you in the name of Yahushua. I now believe that you exist. I confess my sin of unbelief and repent of my unbelief, and I ask you to forgive my sin. I now commit my life to you, and I ask you to take me by the hand and lead me into deep relationship with you. I ask you to fill me with your spirit and to change me and help me to become the person you want me to become. I ask you to help me find people who can help me and help me find books, websites, articles, and other resources that will help me. I ask you to show me what I can do to actively serve you and lead others to deep personal relationship with you. I thank you for saving me. There's a period of 8 days from sincerely coming to belief for the first time, during which there is extreme grace to help you. See the article Critical Actions on First Belief on the website for actions you should take immediately. Drop me an email on james@endtimeissueministries.org so I can help you, pray with you, counsel you, etc. In closing, thank you for listening. Please send me your questions to james@endtimeissueministries.org. Please email me to join the mailing list, also at james@endtimeissueministries.org. If you decide to draw close to the Almighty, please let me know and I can help you. And I can connect with you by Skype, Zoom, Teams, email, or telephone so that I can help you with your journey. I hope to connect with you again next week when I will continue to explore how to become a friend of the Creator. Work with me to make a way for Yeshua to return in victory at the end of the millennium and make his enemies his footstool. Folks, the only reason you exist is to be a friend of the Creator. That's why he created this entire universe and everything in it. If you're not doing that, you are missing the point of your life. And you will be bitterly disappointed when you die. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, educated or uneducated. It doesn't matter whether you're African, Asian, Indian, American, European, Caucasian, whatever. It doesn't matter if you are Buddhist or Jewish or Muslim or Christian or yoga or whatever. It doesn't matter if you're an outright Satanist. It doesn't matter if you're a high-order Satanist, high-order witch or warlock. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, tall or short, thin or fat, whatever. He wants you to become his friend. Pray the prayer that I just gave you a minute ago. Commit your life to him. Drop me an email and I'll help you. I'm at the end of what I'm going to say to those of you who have been regulars on the program. So I'm going to say to you good night. If this is your first or second time, then please hang on. I've got some other information I'd like to share with you. To those who are leaving, thanks so much. Have a good evening. In closing, who am I? James Robertson. I have a doctorate in engineering and I'm a retired military commander. I now work as a management consultant. I have over 31 years' experience of actively seeking to draw close to the Almighty following a dramatic encounter with him on the 12th of March 1993 when he spoke to me audibly in a locked room and I knew for certain that he was real. In learning about Father, I applied my deep-seated aversion to failure born out of an accident in early childhood coupled to my engineering and military training of rigor and preventing failure to my seeking of knowledge about Father. This journey led to numerous supernatural experiences, prayers answered, and clear communication with the Creator that forms the basis for what I teach in these programs. See the video Why Seek Relationship for an overview of what I believe. Please visit my website at www.endtimeissueministries.org for more information. There's a very substantial body of knowledge there written over 25 years or so. ETI version of the Bible with correction of key translation errors is on the ETI Bible version page. For recordings of nearly all of the teachings broadcast so far, search on Google for, quote, relationship with Creator Radio, unquote. Transcripts and recordings are also on the transcripts of broadcast page. Books with teachings from 1998 till May 2019 are on the books for printing page. I publish regular email articles. Email me on james@endtimeissueministries.org to be added to the list or to seek counsel or prayer or give me feedback. Visit the website and use the Google search, article keyword cloud, table of contents, and article search to locate the information you're looking for. Folks, I'm going to say good night and drop me a line and commit your life to Father.
Father, I come to you, lifting up my hands. By your grace I stand, just because you love me, I know your favor.
Hi, I'm James Robertson. I want to ask you what you understand about the history of Yeshua, the anointed of Yah, incorrectly called Jesus Christ. Also, what do you know about the almighty creator of the heavens and the earth, whose true name is Yah, the eternally self-existing? If you're not aware of the life and teachings of Yeshua and you don't know the almighty creator, then please listen to my broadcast on W4CY.com internet radio or Talk4TV.com. Internet TV. Also visit my website at www.endtimeissueministries.org or email me on james@endtimeissueministries.org to find out more. I look forward to hearing from you.